Self-Evident is a platform that is dedicated to speaking truths that were once self-evident and doing so in love. Hey guys, welcome back to another episode. Can Trump fix the birth rate? If you've been paying attention to the news or any other political commentator or cultural commentator, you will have seen that the birth rate is a very heavy topic of conversation currently, particularly because our current replacement rate for children in the United States is actually below replacement rate. We're at 1.62 children per family, and this is according to the government website, Congressional Budget Office. I will, of course, link all these sources below. And what's interesting to note, though, before we get all doom and gloom about the fact that America's replacement rate is so low, is that America is not the only country facing this very bad dilemma. We have Japan, South Korea, Australia, Russia, Finland. They're all experiencing the exact same thing. All these countries, including America, are facing the very real dilemma of how do we keep our societies flourishing? How do we keep our societies functioning if we don't have enough people? Like I said, our replacement rate for children is actually below replacement rate. Our birth rate is 1.62 children per family. You need at least two to just replace, but obviously for a society to flourish, you need a net gain of children. You need over two children per family. And so all of these countries, including America, are kind of scratching their heads of what can we do to incentivize people to have more children. And the Trump administration is jumping on this thinking as well, because the Trump administration, like all these other administrations around the world, recognize that without enough people to occupy and contribute to a country, both economically, financially, relationally, with the talents that you're given, the jobs that you have, you will eventually not have a country. That's just how it goes. And so with this ominous reality in mind, the Trump administration, like I said, has dedicated itself to brainstorming programs and policies that would both incentivize families to have children and reward larger families. And these are what the policies are being talked about. Like I said, nothing has been implemented. This is all in the brainstorming stage, I guess you could say. But one of the policies that's being talked about is reserving nearly one-third of government-funded Fulbright scholarships for applicants who are either married or already have children. This is the second policy that's being considered, devoting a portion of federal funding to women's education regarding the relationship between their menstrual cycles and conception. And finally, awarding $5,000 to mothers after each labor and delivery. And I'm just going to go through each of these policies, what I think about them, what issues I have with them, and what I think the real issue is when it comes to our birth rate issue in America and the issue facing us globally. So the first policy, reserving nearly one-third of the government-funded Fulbright scholarships for applicants who are either married or already have children, I actually am very supportive of this projected or talked about policy, simply because I got married when I was in college, and being married and being a college student are very fun things in a way, but it is stressful because you're newly married and you're trying to figure out life and you're trying to figure out finances. And so often with the scholarships that I had, and this is before I transferred to a different college, but the scholarships that I was offered at my first college, and this was actually before I was married, but all the scholarships I was not able to receive because so many of the scholarships were geared towards whether or not I was white, whether or not I had parents in the home who were married, and whether or not I came from a family that was financially responsible. So for example, if I came from a family who is one, not white, two, financially irresponsible to the point where my parents had absolutely zero brains when it came to how they utilized and stewarded their money, I would have been given an exorbitant amount of money. However, because I came from a family that stewarded what God gave them well, that I'm obviously white. If you're watching on YouTube, if you know me, you know my nationality. And because of that, I did feel in a way that I was punished. I was not able to receive the scholarships that so many other people were able to receive. I remember sitting next to in class one girl who simply, and given our conversation, simply because she was of Islamic descent, she was given a full ride scholarship. And she was not that academically prowessed in any way. And I just remember thinking how sad it was that, I'm not saying I was trying to get a full ride because I ended up hating that college, but in a way, I felt a little gypped that here I am with merits behind me, and yet because I'm white, because I come from a family who my parents are still married and they stewarded their money well, that I'm actually punished for that, because here's this girl who, just because she is from a different nationality descent than I am, she receives all of this money. That's a huge aside as to what I'm specifically talking about in this policy. But all that to say, redoing how we hand out scholarships based on merit, I am 100% for. And I believe that does include whether or not you are married and whether or not you have children, that instead of being punished for that financially, that one or both spouses are still in school and maybe you have a baby on the way, or maybe you already have kids, maybe they're older, whatever the case may be, there should be more money reserved for you specifically in your situation than should be reserved for other people's situations. So all that to say, this policy specifically, I am personally in favor of. That might change if other things come out with this brainstorming process. Obviously, this is all the information that we have right now that people are talking about. So who knows, maybe something might come out down the line that would give more insight into what they're talking about. But on the surface level, I am very supportive of this particular policy. The second policy is devoting a portion of federal funding to women's education regarding the relationship between their menstrual cycles and conception. And I have mixed thoughts on this. My mixed thoughts are that I'm not sure about taxpayer dollars going towards teaching women about their menstrual cycles and conception. I'm not sure that that's where I want my taxpayer dollars to be going to. However, on the same note, the NIH noted something very interesting, that almost half of women have no idea that their menstrual cycle is at all linked to their ability to conceive or how that process even works. And that boggled my mind that, oh, wait, there is a bit of an education and knowledge issue when it comes to women's health. But again, I'm not sure how I feel about the government funding women's education classes. I don't know if that would be a good venture to spend on taxpayer dollars. I'm just not sure that I could get fully behind that. But again, these are just ideas that are being proposed. My mind could change either way. But for now, I'm a little bit more hesitant with accepting this policy. And now the final one that I really want to get into today is awarding $5,000 to mothers after each labor and delivery. So not just your first baby, but your second, your third, your fourth, your fifth. So this is meant to encourage you to have more children, obviously, because you'll get another reward, stipend check from the government. And on the surface, this sounds really nice. I am currently 35 weeks pregnant as of today, that when this episode goes out, and I'm obviously going to be getting ready to give birth in the next month. And the idea of receiving $5,000 for that, I have to be honest, is kind of nice. I won't be mad. I won't send it back. I'll keep it. However, this is what I don't like about this policy, is this reminds me very strongly of the welfare program. And I grew up in the city of Chicago, and the welfare program is very alive and well in cities such as Chicago, New York, LA, San Francisco. And when you look at these welfare policies, they do reward, unintentionally maybe, but they do reward women for having babies outside of marriage. And this is actually why you'll go into a lot of these bad neighborhoods in Chicago, and these women will have 7, 8, 9 kids. I'm not even kidding you. I've talked to police officers who have given their firsthand testimony to me about the welfare program and how it works in the inner city. And this one woman was planning to have another child simply because she would be getting more money from the government. And so that is what I see this policy doing, that it would be also a reward to women who get pregnant and they're not married. And this is kind of getting into the second part of this episode of what the actual birth rate problem is. But what we don't need, and this is where I disagree heavily with Elon Musk, is we don't just need more babies. Yes, I mean, obviously we need more babies. We need more people to occupy America, to occupy the world, to keep a society functioning, to keep the economy growing, to keep everything functioning well. I'm not disregarding that in any way, shape, or form. However, what I am saying is we don't just need more babies. We need more babies in stable families that have a mom and a dad. Not a dad and a dad, not a mom and a mom. We need babies to be born to a mom and a dad who are married and who stay married, because statistically, those children thrive. Those children give back to society. Those children thrive emotionally, spiritually, financially. And when you have a society where for decades upon decades, again, going back to the welfare programs that have rewarded women for not getting married, for sleeping around, for having a bunch of kids, what we see is crime goes up, poverty goes up, drug use goes up. One of the biggest indicators, and I've said this before, of whether or not children will graduate from high school, whether or not children will go on to be successful in their careers, whether or not they will go on to be successful in their own families, whether or not they will go on to not use drugs, whether or not they'll be promiscuous. The one indicator of that is fatherlessness in the home, is whether or not the mom and the dad are married. So again, we don't just need more babies. We need more babies in stable families that have a mom and a dad who are married, not cohabitating, married. And like I said before, it's not just America that is facing this problem. S.A. McCarthy from the Washington Stand notes that, quote, other nations, including Australia, China, Estonia, Finland, and Japan, have similar programs providing financial rewards or incentives to mothers and families in an effort to increase birth rates. However, Australia has fallen to a historic low of 1.5, China to 1.0, Estonia to 1.31, Finland 1.25, Japan 1.26, all well below the 2.1 needed to maintain population stability. So the pronounced decline in birth rates is not being halted by financial programs incentivizing having children, but worsening in most cases to historic lows despite such programs. Other countries, in essence, are trying what the Trump administration is brainstorming, and it hasn't worked. In fact, like S.A. McCarthy noted, in most cases, it's actually worsened to historic lows despite the programs. And this is getting to the heart of what is actually behind the birth rate issue. It's not a lack of finances. It's not economic instability. Because throughout history, the American people, people around the world have faced financial hardship, have faced bodily hardship, and that has never been an indicator of whether or not you would have children. I just think back to Little House on the Prairie, for example, of Charles and Caroline, and having more kids despite how financially strained things were. That was never an indication in any metric in history of whether or not people would have children, of whether or not the economy was stable enough, or whether or not it was safe enough. People still had kids. The problem, America's declining birth rate, is the symptom of a deeper problem, and it's a spiritual one. For decades, the American culture has turned its back on God, denying his authority over the family, denying his authority over life. We have rampant abortion, especially in the state of Illinois, up to 40 weeks that you can abort your baby, which is absolutely despicable to even think about. We have transgender ideology. We have gay marriage. We have gay couples adopting kids. We have completely lost and abandoned and declined to follow God's design for the family. And we wonder why the family falls apart. We wonder why we have a birth rate issue. It's because we have not bowed the knee to God's authority. Mary Soach, I think I'm saying her last name correctly, is the director for Center for Human Dignity at the Family Research Council, an amazing organization. And she commented to the Washington Stand something very interesting, and I just want to read it for you before we close. Quote, "It seems to me that people aren't having children because of a plethora of other reasons, providing funding for restorative reproductive medicine so that couples can find and fix the root cause of their infertility would be a great start. Addressing the fact that both the porn industry and the social media industry are targeting, attacking, and addicting children and teens, preventing their brains from developing properly, and later preventing those children from forming lasting relationships would also be helpful. Passing legislation allowing school choice so that families can afford to send their kids to schools where their faith will be strengthened and where values of courage, selflessness, and true love will be taught is another idea." And I think those policy propositions from Mary Soch are actually much better than the propositions of the Trump administration so far, that we need to address what's actually going on. And I would go a step farther than her to say we need to get rid of gay marriage. We need to get rid of the ability of transgender couples, of gay couples, homosexual couples to be able to adopt children. That needs to not be allowed. We need to address social media, how prevalent even pornography is on social media. We need to have better restrictions for that. I want the entire porn industry to be outlawed completely. But ultimately, we can enact policy after policy. We can get rid of abortion. We can get rid of gay marriage. We can get rid of the porn industry. We can get rid of all these things. But if the heart of the people does not change, if the heart of the people is still in rebellion against God and his design for family, the birth rate will not change. Again, this is a spiritual issue. While there's nothing wrong with providing families with financial incentives and benefits, even though I disagree with a lot of different things, when it comes to having a family, these policies alone are not going to fix it. The only thing that will ever be able to fix the birth rate in America is not Trump. It's not his policies. It's not the conservative movement. It's not getting rid of all the evil. It is a return to the God of the Bible. It is repentance from our sin, from our rebellion against him, from our denial of how he ordered and designed the world as a nation. And it is a return to his perfect design and intention for children and the family. That is the only thing that will fix our declining birth rate. All right, guys, I hope you enjoyed this episode. And until next time, let us firmly rely on the protection of divine providence. This is Self-Evident.